J8. Number 3B.
Yes, and then we see point two then is under the science of government and the law of God. Now we come to the government of God. Therefore, we see not only that law constitutes government, we could always also say that, therefore, that government is the execution of law. That's what's happening when God governs the universe now, that God is executing its laws, and that constitutes government. All right, so we can take this sense of government through the three degrees, how that concept of government is taken out of Egypt through the wilderness into the promised land, how that sense of government is taken out of the physical into the second degree of the moral, into the third degree of the spiritual. And what we see then is that the differing forms of government can be classified according to the nature of the laws on which they are based. So in the first degree of the physical, anarchy, which is the absence of law. So when you have no laws, you'd have no government. The next point there would be autocracy, or we would say oligarchy. There's different ways of pronouncing that. I'll take the one of oligarchy. And autocracy is laws set down by a single ruler. So those are laws. Government is the execution of laws, which is set down by a single ruler, or a small group, which is an oligarchy. The origin of these laws within an autocracy or an oligarchy would be then the will of one person or a small group. Really, the origin would be the human mind and its beliefs and prejudice. And the nature of these laws in the first degree of the physical, under an autocracy or under the control of a despot, would be the laws of limitation and the laws of slavery. But we see the world is crying and coming out of this sense of autocracy or government by the will of one person or a small group of people and their laws of limitation. And the revolution of 1989 is showing the move now towards the second degree, to the moral, and into what we see called modern democracies. Now, a democracy, therefore, would be government by the execution of laws who have their origin in the will of the majority of the people. Those are still human laws because the human mind of the majority, based on morality, makes up those laws. There's still the laws of limitation in a democracy because the majority or the mob rules. And one can always say, well, what about the minority? Is the majority always right? Not always. So hopefully a society based on morality will come up with that which is for the general good and pass laws which are for the general good of mankind. And we certainly have seen in the United States the effort in democracy to set up laws according to a moral standard. But the ultimate government is not democracy then, as we've seen, is theocracy. And in summation, those then are the laws set down by God. Therefore, God, the divine mind, is the origin of those laws. And the nature of those laws are purely spiritual and universal. And nowhere in Science and Health does Mrs. Eddy ever indicate that man could create real laws, enforce, or develop them. She only will say Miscellany, that human law is right only as it patterns the divine. So in seeing therefore these spiritual laws that if government is the execution of laws, then the government of God is executing these spiritual laws. Now in Mrs. Eddy's textbook, Science and Health, it's really hard. You cannot look to one place in the textbook in a certain page and find out how she defines the laws of God. Her whole textbook defines the laws of God. So it's only from her statements can you ascertain how to find the laws of God. It's not there bluntly, as Max Kepler has spent his life showing us what the laws, the structure of laws and the being are behind the Bible and behind the textbook. John Dorley felt the laws behind the Bible, though he called them orders. But Max Kepler was the one who actually called those orders, which were invariable laws, and began to show how Mrs. Eddy defined laws and what laws are and what laws mean. It was really relatively new to him. And this terrific pioneering work and legacy he is giving to us on the subject of laws. I mean, I think of the of us who are new that come to the subject of Christian Science and were presented with these laws. Kepler struggled with it. As a younger man, he saw in Science, Theology, and Medicine where Mrs. Eddy said, "I discovered the laws of life, truth, and love." And he would go to various practitioners and say, "What are the laws?" And they would, of God, and they say, "Well, they're the laws." And he says, "But what are the laws of God?" "Well, they're the laws of God." "I know, but can you define them?" "No, God is law." See, they didn't know what laws are, nor could they define what laws are. So he would see, showed that Mrs. Eddy's statements show us how to find the laws of God in Science and Health. And he paid strict attention to what she was saying. As she said, "I hid it and hid it. And if I'm going to hide it anymore, nobody's going to find it." So in her textbook, this one's in prose work in Miscellaneous Writings 258. She makes a statement. "In the spiritual genesis of creation, all law was vested in the lawgiver, who was a law to himself." So we see that she's saying that God is a law to himself. That perked up Kepler's ears. Somehow there is, in the statement of defining law, she says, God is a law to himself. That's interesting. God in governing himself according to a law. God governs God according to God's law. And then the open question, what is this law? She says in Miscellany, science is the law of God. And Kepler said to himself, "Oh my, that whole realm of science is the law of God. That whole realm of system, categories, and structures within the textbook, that makes up the laws of God. That's where you can find these spiritual laws. That you can find the spiritual laws behind prayer, the spiritual laws behind Atonement and Eucharist, the spiritual laws behind marriage, the spiritual laws behind Christian Science versus spiritualism, the spiritual laws behind the annihilation of animal magnetism, the spiritual laws behind truth, science, theology, and medicine, the spiritual laws behind physiology. All those chapters of the textbook begins, the whole realm and the system of the textbook begins to show us the laws that are operating in being. According to whatever subject, as I said, whether it's prayer, atonement, and Eucharist, marriage. And they could then see that all of the system and structure and category behind the Bible gives us the laws behind the Bible. Whether you have the law given in the 7 days of creation, which is the law of creativity, the law of the 7 days, and so forth. So that whole realm of science and system, he saw, oh, that's where we find these laws, in the subject itself. And then Mrs. Eddy talked about law in a fourfold way. She says, God is the lawmaker, God is the lawgiver, God is the only law of creation, and God is the only law of being. And Christian Science is the law of God, the law of good, interpreting and demonstrating the divine principle and rule of universal harmony. So he could see then, therefore, just... And as I go on, I will come and give you the exact laws, whether they're the laws of isness or the laws of spontaneity, etc., etc. But right now, just to keep it in a general tonality of the subject, when she said God is a law to himself, we, Kapler, could see, oh, that is the statement of what law means on the level of science itself, that level of the infinite one principle, where principle is being its own infinite principle. It's the law of pure reflection, the law of isness up on that level, the law of being. One would just say that principle is being its own infinite principle when God is a law to himself. Where mind is being its own infinite mind, spirit is being its own infinite spirit, soul is being its own infinite soul, principle is being its own infinite principle, life is being its own infinite life, truth is being its own infinite truth, and love is being its own infinite love. God is being its own infinite God. See, that's that highest level of law, that law of being. Then she gives other laws, which would be on the level of divine science, where she shows, and again, just for the big view, where she shows that God is the lawmaker. That has that sense of divine science at the word. God, as the word, declares what the law is. God is the lawmaker. Then on divine science is the Christ, and God is the lawgiver. In a divine science and Christianity, God is the only law of creation. Or Mrs. Eddy will say, divine science and science, God is the only law of being. That whole law of divine science, that law of self-organization, where God is operating out of itself, through itself, as itself, and for itself, as lawmaker, lawgiver, the only law of creation, the only law of being. When principle is, and its idea is one, when principle is in relationship to its universe. Then, when she talks about law on the level of absolute Christian science, Kapler could see that she talks about Christian science as a law of God, the law of good. That's that whole level of absolute Christian science where you have those, that law of spontaneity for the level law, and those laws on that level of absolute Christian science are always operating for the maximum of good. And on the level of Christian science, the law level of the law of divine causality, really those laws are demonstrating, therefore, the divine principle and rule of universal harmony as it is brought out in our life experience. But by paying attention to just the statements in Mrs. Eddy's works, Kapler could begin to see what the laws of being are, how to find them, let's say. Now, if we now come back to our thesis of government, I want to take us to this point, how government is the execution of law, and that you get the law you deserve. You get the government we deserve. We get the laws we deserve. If we are on a physical level, then the Christ appears to us as a despotic control. If we're on the moral level, then the Christ appears to us as a more democratic control. If we're on the spiritual level, then the Christ appears to us as a theocratic control. Now, this sense of government, that we get the government we deserve according to our nature, and we get the government executing the type of laws it does according to our nature, is shown also in the Western world, in the Western philosophical world. But it was only seen dimly by Plato. Plato, in talking about government and the setting up of political systems, Plato, you know, back in B.C. times, let's put him at about 427 to 347 B.C., he began to dimly see, which Mrs. Eddy shows us in these 3 degrees, that we get the government and laws that we deserve because of our human nature. That it isn't so much how awful it is that the world had been under a despotic government. It's because the animal nature of man demanded that type of government, how horrible it might have been. And Plato saw this, and that if we had a more moral nature, we'd get a different form of government. If we had a spiritual nature, we'd get another form of government. He was a student, you know, as we know, of Socrates. He himself was an aristocrat from Athens, and we know he was the founder then of the first college, the Academy, in around 388 B.C. He was the first great systematic political theorist. After him comes Aristotle. In his book on the Republic, we get that whole, what he felt was one of the ideal forms of government. And in that, we get that whole subject of the meaning and implementation of justice and its handling of injustice. But the main point of Plato's work I want to bring out here is his distinction between human beings on the part of the soul. And he said that the distinction of human beings depended upon what part of the soul was dominating in their character. And he said there are 3 parts of the soul. 1, the appetite, 2, courage, and 3, reason. And he says these 3 elements of the soul were related to one's class and the function that you played in society. If the appetite dominated, you were into the labor class. That's the class you went into. If courage dominated, you were a warrior. If reason dominated, you'd become a ruler. And he said, therefore, that government and constitutions were related to the nature or character of its citizens. That a good state, therefore, was like a good man. A good state possessed then good qualities. See, those good moral qualities as temperance, courage, wisdom, and justice. But if you had a bad state, was reflected, of course, then with all the natures we would associate with the negative natures of man. And he said, therefore, that our moral values and behavior depends on our psychological traits, or which depend on our biological characteristics. Therefore, he said that the virtues depended on the psychological traits, which depended on our biological characteristics. So he said that the biological trait which predominated, let's say, of the head, would bring out the trait of the psychological trait predominant in us of the rational, which would bring out the virtue of us in wisdom. If the physiological trait of the heart led the situation, then that would bring out what he called the psychological trait of the spiritual, which to us was just the moral, which brought out the virtue of courage. And he said if the biological trait of the stomach dominated, it brought out the psychological trait of the appetite characteristic within us, which would bring out the virtue of moderation. So one can begin to see he's showing that these different categories are depending on the nature, on the physiological, psychological nature of man. So he showed, therefore, that in a good state, and we're talking about government, that the political organization depended upon the virtues of each member. Therefore, if the virtue of wisdom predominated, then the duty you would get within that state would be a duty of government or instruction. You'd be a teacher, so you'd belong to the teaching class. If the virtue of courage dominated in you, then you would be have the duty to protect the state. You would be in the class of a warrior. If the virtue of moderation dominated, you'd get the duty of artisan, and you'd be in the working class. And everybody started out equal. You all went to school. He said that would be ideal. But as one went through the system, the educational system, it would soon become apparent which ones had the virtue of wisdom, which ones had the virtue of courage, and which one had the virtue of moderation. The ones with the virtue of moderation had the least amount of schooling. They soon became the artisans, which became the working class. Then the next group to get a little more schooling would be those with the virtue of courage, which would begin to protect the state and were the warrior class. But those that went on to become the elite were those that began to show that virtue of wisdom, and they then got the higher education. They went on to become responsible in government, and they then became the teaching class or the guardians. So you see, he says, you get the type of duty you deserve according to your virtues, your nature, and you become a part of the class that you deserve according to your nature. So he began dimly to see this then, that man's nature would determine the type of government he would receive and the type of duties he would receive. Quite interesting, because in the 3 degrees, Mrs. Eddy also shows that from the physical nature of the first degree, we get that autocratic government, that despotic government. From the second degree of the moral, as I've seen, we get that democratic government. But if we really are in the spiritual, we get government by God, which is self-government. As she shows, that there is no way one can have self-government with a nature of the first degree. You see, from the standpoint of the physical, with a physical nature, man cannot govern itself. That man, she says, has to be, the Christ appears as a despotic control, to control that animal nature. You get a hierarchical control. There's nothing wrong with a hierarchical control if the nature of man is animalistic. It has to have that authority figure. It's only that when man begins to evolve out of that negative, evil nature, will the despot leave, you see? The despotic government leave. And when man becomes more moral, then he deserves democracy. And when mankind evolves into the spiritual, with a nature which is purely spiritual, he deserves the government of theocracy, which is self-government. Man, governed by his maker, is self-governed. Then nobody tells us what to do except the laws of God, except man's relationship to God. But that is earned, you see. Now, just to show, I'm building towards the setting up of how Mrs. Eddy showed theocracy and its government, and especially how she set up the church. It's incredible, her method of government in the Christian Science Church organization with the mother church and the branch churches. But to show that Plato dimly saw, and I say dimly, he didn't see what Mrs. Eddy saw, he dimly foresaw what she finally showed as true government. He showed, therefore, that there was this various levels of society where there would be equal opportunity to a certain extent, and that your nature would begin to decide what category you belonged in being. But he said that the most ideal form of government would be a monarch, not democracy. He said the philosopher king is the highest perfect choice for government. The philosopher king who rules with perfect wisdom and justice. Therefore, that's his statement, until kings become philosophers or philosophers kings, there is no hope for the state. Catching really what Samuel saw, that it was government through inspiration, and that these Plato began to see that somehow government could come through inspiration, and he had it as a philosopher king. He said that if any public official who far excelled others could become a monarch, but if there was no one comparable to Socrates in wisdom, then there would not be a monarchy. That had to be pure. It is not a despot. It would be pure government through inspiration there. So if nobody had the wisdom of a Socrates, then the next best form of government, he said, was an aristocracy or a republic, which is administered by the best qualified people, the highest intellectually and morally. It would be as a senate of aristocrats, he said, who would live as communists, holding no property of their own during the period of public service. You can see as so that they wouldn't become corrupt.